Our fourth storyteller is Lisa Keller. Lisa was born and raised in Alaska. Every weekend growing up, her dad took her hiking in the Chugach or skiing up at Arctic Valley. She was able to parlay her love of outdoors and physical activity into a business, Multisport Training of Alaska. Lisa is a two-time Alaska Triathlete of the Year and has won the Gold Nugget Triathlon and the Eagle River Triathlon. She is also a breast cancer survivor and has repeatedly won the Survivor Division in the Alaska Run for Women. Although she has had success in road races and triathlons, her favorite training is fat biking in Far North Bicentennial Park and running the trails of Chugach State Park with her dog, Seven. Please welcome Lisa Keller.
So I was born 2 months before the 1964 earthquake, which was not really exciting for me, but was pretty exciting for my parents. So, and my parents had come up the year before from Palo Alto, but my dad was from Montana, and he just had this really deep frontier sense of the outside, and he loved being outdoors. And so he took my brother and I outside hiking and camping and skiing all the time. So we were really exposed to a lot. And Anchorage was pretty wild back then. There were some serial killers around and there were wild animals and really crazy trails, and our parents would let us explore. And they gave us a lot of opportunities to enjoy nature and to pursue the things we love. They always encouraged us. So I was really lucky, like Steve said, to be able to make that into a business, into something I love to do, be outside, be in nature, help other people connect to each other, because connections to me are really important, having been born in this community and making it my home for 53 years now. So in 2012, I was asked to be the head coach for a new program out at Highland Prison. And Tim Alderson was working as an intern in the mental health unit at that time, and he decided to start a program for his master's thesis, and it was a running program for the female inmates, to see what their response was to running. And he looked at four indicators of health: physical, mental, social, and environmental. And I don't think it's a surprise to anybody who's active here that, you know, 12 weeks at the end of that program, we had a 5K, and all four of those indicators in all 25 women improved immensely. So it was a pretty powerful program to us. So we decided to start that we have like two sessions a year. And in the spring, when the snow melts, the women go outside and run their workouts on what I call the shortest trail in Anchorage. It's one of the most beautiful, though. It sits right at the opening of the Eagle River Valley. There's mountains everywhere. You feel like you're in nature, except for the barbed wire along the fences. And so they run on this essentially 337-meter dirt trail. It has a little bit of rock in it. And then when we do our races, we've gotten permission to run the inside perimeter of the prison. It's 800 meters long. Again, it's a dirt trail. It's rocky, a little bit of grass. There's a little bit of concrete in it. So it's a really powerful thing to go and watch these races and watch these women accomplish this. I'm really lucky to have a great group of female coaches out there, many of them who are avid trail runners, and there's a lot in the audience today. I'm really excited to see you here. And I was talking to a few of them, and you know, they really have heartfelt feelings about this program and what it does for the women. But for themselves personally, like Jackie describes running in the mountains and feeling both small and insignificant, but at the same time powerful and strong. And then Karen and Ellen both talked about joy and peace and solitude and working through problems in the mountains when they're running. And then Paula had lost a sister, and it really helped her running in the mountains to work through those emotions of losing her sister. But what all four of them talked about were the connections to the people that they had in the running community, in the mountain running community, in the ultra running community, and how strong those connections were and how they helped them get through tough times in their lives. So super important. So not all of us were really, heavily encouraged sometimes. We had different levels of encouragement in our families, but our parents all opened doors and allowed us to walk through these doors and have a better experience in our life. That's not the case for probably 99% of the women at Highland Prison. And so this is a story really about Gina. She's one of our runners. She was born to two drug-addicted parents. Her mother's actually been sober for 8 years now. But at the time, when she was an infant, her mother had five children. She lost all her parental rights to those five children. And so Gina ended up in foster care. And she was in foster care for her whole 18 years. She does not have good experiences in foster care. She remembers one good experience in foster care, one good foster family. In the rest, she saw abuse. She was abused. She was never encouraged to do anything. She was never exposed to nature. No one ever told her she was a good person. What she feels like she was a paycheck to people. And that's just a really sad way to go through your whole life. So she was in foster care in Anchorage for the first 10 years of her life. And then she went out to Wasilla, and she was in foster care out in Wasilla. And about that time, when she was 13 or 14, her dad came back into her life. And, you know, for all his drama and trauma in his life, he actually did give her a little support that she hadn't had to this point. And she had really kind of already developed a bunch of fear inside of herself. And I don't know if it was fear of failure, fear of succeeding, or just fear of life itself. A lot of it was, I think. But her dad kind of encouraged her. He had actually gone to East High, she told me, and I went and checked my yearbook because I went to East High, and he was a senior when I was a freshman. And he had played basketball and run track, so he encouraged her to do those things. And he would come to her meets, and he would come to her games, and she'd and give her pointers about what to do, and she remembers these pointers. And she really felt like that was like a high point of her life, and she felt good about those years with him. When she was 18, at that time, when she turned 18, you're just out of the foster system. So she was thrown out of the foster system, and she lived with her dad at first because she really felt like she needed to take care of him and be with him. And he has since, though her mother is sober, he has since had an alcohol-related incident that he's actually institutionalized and brain dead. And so she's now obviously lost that connection with him. But she stayed with him until an old boyfriend came into town, and old boyfriends are never any good, really. And this kid had been a good kid when they were in high school, and she had been a good kid. She had never been arrested. She had drank a beer once and smoked pot once. That's all she had done, and that's amazing to really escape foster care and not have had a drug problem to begin with from that. But he had been out fishing, and he came back, and he was addicted to cocaine. So she went on a drug run with him, and she met his drug dealer, and that was the beginning of a lot of the pain in her life. So not only did that drug dealer introduce her to meth and heroin, but he became her boyfriend, and they had a child together. That child's 8 and a half right now, and he's doing pretty good. But they had this child together, and then he isolated her in a family compound out in Wasilla. And they were all pretty much criminals there. And so she felt like further isolated and fearful. She was always looking over her shoulder because, you know, they were selling drugs, and that's a scary life to be in. And so that fear and paranoia grew, and it grew with the drug use. I mean, the meth and the heroin really made it worse. She never had to pay for drugs, she told me. She was just supplied drugs. Eventually, she left that without him, came back to Anchorage. In Anchorage, her family became increasingly concerned about her because she was just falling into this abyss of paranoia and fear, and so they had her committed to API. When she got out of API, she immediately went on a meth binge, and within 11 hours of leaving API, she committed her crime. Her crime is a pretty heinous crime, and it's a crime that she hasn't been sentenced yet, but it's a crime that could get her a life sentence at Highland Prison. So she's 30 years old now. This happened when she was 24, and she could be one of those long-time, you know, people that we see out there who are 50 or 60 or 70 years old now. So the first 6 months at Highland, she was in the mental health unit. She was completely disconnected from reality. She wasn't even sure that what she had done was real. She told me, she goes, even afterwards, she didn't really feel like it was real. It was like a dream. So she was in the mental health unit for 6 months. And when she came to us, and the other coaches who are here will remember this, she was just all withdrawn, tiny. Her head was down. She's smaller than me anyway. She's like 5 feet tall and 100 pounds. She looked like a child, and you look at her and you can't imagine her doing this horrible crime, but she did. And so she had still all that fear that she was holding in herself, but it was so clear how athletic she was. I mean, she could do the running drills, she could do the ladder drills, she was so fast. And as she started gaining confidence over the years in our program, she started to decide to really challenge herself and push back at all that fear, which she did. She pushed back successfully. And before you knew it, she had wiped out our records. And this started a year ago. So in the fall, a year ago, she ran a 10K in 49.22 around that 800-meter dirt track inside the prison. 49.22, first runner in our program ever to break 50 minutes. In this past spring, she ran a 22.01 5K, which would have placed her 15th overall female at the Heart Run this past year. And I can see some of you recognize times, and you're getting it, you know. This past fall, she ran a 1:49:56 half marathon. That's 25 laps around that 800-meter track. 1:49:56. She broke our previous record by 20 minutes. Huge. She annihilated it. So the other great thing about her is she's become this great leader of our culture. And in our running group, they see disrespecting the running program is like way bigger deal to them than getting a parole violation or being thrown in the hole. Like if you disrespect the running program, if you try to take advantage of it, they don't want you anymore. And they've really developed this great culture. So Gina right now dreams about running the Boston Marathon. And she dreams about going out with all these coaches who have helped her connect to life and connect to each other and who believe in her. We believe in her. No one's believed in her before. And running the trails with us in the Chugach. And she wants to go over to Kona and do the Lava Man triathlon with the 300-400 other Alaskans that go every March to do this triathlon. It would be her first triathlon if she can do it. But right now she's running around the shortest trail in Anchorage, round and round and round. And after her last race, after that half marathon, she crossed the line, and she had really had to dig deep for those last two laps because we knew she could break 150, and we told her that in the last two laps. And she dug deep. She pushed back at that fear, and she dug deep, and she broke that 150 mark. And she crossed the line. We're all crying, and she's crying. And then she stops, and she looks up at the mountains. So just all right there, and she says, "I love this life." Yeah, we all love this life. Welcome to this life, Gina. Thank you.